Everyone and welcome. Sorry we're a few minutes late. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening. We've got a big group tonight. Thanks for being here. We'll call our meeting to order. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Dennerick.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green is excused. Trustee Sampson.
Here.
All present and accounted for. I understand we want to scratch number 12. We're going to scratch number 12 because that has been dealt with at an earlier time. Are there any other modifications to the agenda? Do I have a motion to adopt the amendment? Trustee Harris.
I don't know if we do it when we get there or just bring it up now. I'm wondering, hoping to get a little bit more information with some of the other stuff we had going on regarding item 13. If we can, I don't know if there's an urgency to have that one completed today. If we can table it, either as part of just bringing it up with modifying the agenda or talk about it at the next meeting.
And that's for our contract with?
The assessor, yeah.
Oh.
So is there, I don't know if there's an urgency to get it done tonight or not. Okay, I have a handful of questions I didn't ask,
okay.
So I'm not properly prepared.
Okay.
Let's leave it at that.
You good with that, Brad?
Yes.
Okay. We'll move number 13 to another.
Okay.
To the next meeting. Any other modifications? Hearing none, I'll accept the motion to adopt the amended agenda. Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Genrich. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Got a full schedule tonight, starting out with a lot of announcements. First announcement, absentee ballots are available for the November 6th election. You can vote in person right here at Village Hall, and you have until November 1st, I believe, to request your ballots by mail. All the information on that is on our Village website, and don't forget, you need an acceptable form of photo ID to vote regardless of when you're doing so. Gifts for Teens, Green Bay Metro Fire. This is a recurring event. And on Tuesday, December 4th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., our firefighters will be escorting Santa's sleigh through your neighborhood in hopes that you'll help us fill it. With much-needed teen gifts. We'll take those gifts to the Salvation Army for distribution to the Brown County teens in need. It's truly a great cause. If you would like more information, you can email chadde at greenbaywi.gov. Our budget workshop schedule is our first budget workshop is scheduled for October 22nd. We will have a second budget workshop on October 25th if it is needed. And we will have our budget hearing right here on November 20th. Next announcement, Drug Take-Back Day on October 27th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here at Village Hall. Once again, you can get all the information you need on the Village website, so get all those old medications and get them out of your closet and bring them over here. We'll take care of them for you. Trick-or-treat hours, and it seems it's true here and in all the municipalities for some reason. It is on October 31st, and put on your costumes and trick-and-treat between 4 and 7 p.m. The next announcement, there is starting November 1st through March 31st, there is no overnight parking in Alloway. Next, Father Alloway Catholic School annual auction on November 10th from 5 to 11 p.m. It's a recurring event. It's a fundraiser for the school. So please join them and have some fun. There is no village board meeting. I know for those of you who join us on a regular basis, this is a sad news for you. But on Tuesday, November 6th, there is no village board meeting because of Election Day, and we will have people in here voting. Next, Brothers Grimm Fairy Tale Halloween event at Heritage Hill on October 20th from 3 to 8 p.m. I know they have information on the Heritage Hill website, but it's a big event over at Heritage Hill. Tickets are $7, and you get to go have a lot of fun. The kids love it, and adults as well. That is it for my announcements. Does anyone else have any announcements? Hearing none. We will move on to our presentation section of the evening. We have two exciting presentations tonight. The first will be our quarterly update and new water budget overview by Mr. Tom Signa. Welcome, Tom.
Well, thank you. Exciting. I'll do my best.
Let's make water exciting.
I'll do my best. Well, thank you again. I'm Tom Signa, Executive Director for New Water. Mostly talk a little bit about budget today, but we'll talk about our R2E2 project and some work that we're going to be doing in the watershed. So just a reminder for everyone, our vision for New Water is protecting our most valuable resource, water. Our 2019 budget, as you look at flows and loads over the last 5 years with 15 through 17 being actual, and 18 and 19 are budgeted amounts. We've been fairly steady with flows and loads, so that's a good thing. It takes that out of the equation in terms of either pushing up or bringing down the rate. So this is a summary of our 2019 proposed expenses. The revenue matches the expenses, so in the two categories, operation and maintenance, we are down a little over 1% compared to 2018 budget. And our debt service and annual capital, we are up about 3% over 2018. And that is primarily we're starting to take on additional capital projects for aging infrastructure that needs to be replaced at the facilities. The R2E2 project, We've collected, we're at a level of collecting as much as we need for the remainder of that loan, so this is on other projects. So if you look at when you combine the total expenses, we're just a little over $40 million total expenses, and that's up just a little under 1%. We're still, as staff, fiddling with the budget, some project timing, and some other O&M things, and I think we're probably going to finish fairly close to this when we have our final budget go out for public notice in mid-November.
May I just ask, we have a different number set in our packet. Any ideas why that would be?
This is of as the September 26th presentation to the commission. I did make a presentation to our commission on August, the end of August. So
the numbers look better on the last packet.
That was probably August.
Okay.
Our capital projects, as we were looking at them, things are becoming much more expensive for capital projects.
You've got a September 6th date.
That was when we went to the customer meeting was as of the August commission meeting budget. So I can't go back. When you look at where the money, so on the previous slide, we're about 53% in operation and maintenance and 47% in capital. We're probably going to stay that way for a little while, possibly capital inching up a little bit, but O&M should be stable for a while. When you look at where we spend the money in our O&M budget, again, that 53%, Half of it is in salaries and benefits for our employees. The other biggest one is contracted services, work that we do with outside engineers and other companies provide services to us. Maintenance, and then power. Power and natural gas and fuel oil have been coming down over the last couple of years as we're ramping up the R2E2 project, and that will reduce, has been reducing the amount of electricity we purchase from the private utility, and also natural gas as we're recovering heat and generating our own electricity. When you look at where the money comes from, it all comes from our customers. Green Bay and De Pere are our two largest municipal customers, and then followed by, you can see, Schwabenham, Howard, Alloway, Bellevue, Procter & Gamble. And then we have 15 municipal customers, so the remainder of the 15 municipal customers make up that other 11% of our revenue. So this is a slide that is for comparison only. The rates that you see there are not the rates that you're charged because they have a fixed charge component put into it. It is to try to compare 2018 and 2019 on the parameters, the volume and strength parameters. So due to how our costs are coming out, and we also did a reapportionment in May of this year. Our consultant comes in about every 4 years and looks at where the investment is in our facilities for capital projects, and that gets changed as we're starting to see the R2E2 project get reconciled in as an asset. And so you see that there was about a 5% increase this year in volume charges. The biochemical oxygen demand is going down, as is the suspended solids. Phosphorus is about the same, and nitrogen charge gone up a little bit. Again, this is a reflection of where our costs are incurred, whether it's O&M or capital costs. So just an overall summary of the budget, we're looking at about a 0.7% increase in total expenses, with O&M down 1.2% over 2018. I think this is the third, if not the fourth year in a row that WPS has held electricity rates, which we're very thankful for. Seeing a 3% increase in capital costs over the 2018 budget, and for our interceptor projects, primarily debt on interceptor projects, we are offsetting most of that debt service through the interceptor cost recovery reserve that we have. So it's a reserve that money, when we build an interceptor for customers, we build it, we take out a loan for it, and our customers pay us back, and so that money is just kind of coming and going to help pay the debt service on it. So next steps on the budget. Yours is the only customer meeting that I have. We put the offer out to all of our customers, and you are the only taker every year, so I appreciate that. Otherwise, I would good presentation go to waste. So we're not anticipating any additional customer meetings, but if someone calls, we will go out and visit with any of our customers. We did hold that meeting on September 6th with I invited public works directors and administrative staff from our customers, as well as the industrial dischargers. So then we're going to notice the publish the budget in the newspaper. I think it occurs somewhere around the middle of November. It's 2 weeks before our meeting. And then we will have on December 5th, and it is in the morning, budget hearing and then adoption. So as we've done in every past meeting, any comments that we have, whether they're written or people come in person, they're presented to our commission. So if you have any comments that you want conveyed to our commission, you can send those to me or you can attend the meeting, but I will make sure that our commissioners get that information. And then right after will be notification out to the customers for the final budget. So we've shared a lot of information back and forth. primarily to help our customers do their own internal budgeting. We know that if we wait until December 5th, that it's way too late for most of our customers. We try to update you as we go along and also be as close as we can with the information. But what happens is what happened in September, August to September, and September the final, there's slight revisions. So, a couple of things. This one is a trying to take a portrait slide and put it on something that's landscape, but I'll tell you a little bit about that. This is on the watershed. First, before the watershed, we did our dedication of the R2E2 project today. Had some elected officials come in and celebrated the completion of the project, so we're up and running. Still got little things that we're working on, tweaking on the project, but it's going quite well. I think the people that were able to see the facilities today were pleased with how their money got spent. So the R2E2 project's up and running. What you're seeing here, and I'll walk over by the slides just to show you. So this is the Fox River running north to Green Bay. This area in the light blue is what was our Silver Creek pilot project. So it was about a 4,800-acre watershed where we've been working for the last 4.5 years. What you're seeing in the dark, in that large outline, you see how much larger it is. That is the Dutchman and Ashwaubenon Creek watersheds that where we are going to be working for likely the next 20 years, doing some of the same projects that we've done in the Silver Creek sub-watershed, but basically working with agriculture to find ways to reduce runoff of nutrients and sediment into the water. So that's we're going to submit that to the Department of Natural Resources for their approval by the end of the year. We've been working through this process for several years. And assuming DNR gives us the approval, at 5 years at a time, we'll actually be working with agricultural producers in the watershed and also a number of the non-government organizations looking just to try to reduce the amount of sediment and phosphorus. And we're doing that, if you recall, as a much lower cost effort for us for compliance by working out in the watershed. Yes?
Why are we not doing anything on in between the Fox and the East River?
So we, as an organization, had to pick, it's going to be more complicated, but it had to pick an area where we had to work that was about the size of the discharge of the amount of phosphorus that we discharged to the river. And there were some areas, the East River, which you will be in the East River sub-watershed, is very large and was much larger than we needed to be working in. So what happened was the Dutchman and Ashwaubenon Creek were about the right size. It is adjacent to the work we've done in Silver Creek. It has a lot of similar farmers that have been agricultural producers have been working across. So that does not preclude you as a community from working in agricultural areas, but for us as the utility, we're going to end up picking that. We're going to get DNR, ask them to approve that, and then we'll be working that for the next 20 years. So, unfortunately, again, the complicated parts of it is the monitoring requires you to pick a watershed, not a piece of a watershed, but a watershed to work in, and the East River is just way too large for us to be working.
How does that impact alloys if you're reducing the amount of phosphorus and everything getting into the Fox River from the other side of the river? How does that impact us and our costs?
Well, so you as a community have a municipal stormwater obligation to deal with nutrients and sediment coming in, and so you're dealing with those things typically with ponds or street sweeping or other things that you're doing. We also, as the utility that serves your entire area, not your streets but the sewers, have an obligation, and so the impact that you're having as a community is that it's reducing the cost for all of New Water's customers by us working in that particular watershed compared to building stuff at the treatment plant. So you have an obligation as a municipality from a stormwater obligation, and that's not impacted by this. This is the obligation that you as communities have as part of the Metropolitan Sewers District.
Is a Schmabana's job easier because of the projects that you're doing and the amount of money that they have to spend?
Possibly. We haven't had the conversation yet with the village of Eshwabanon, as they do not have to be working. In matter of fact, they can only work in an agricultural area through a utility like ours. So we don't know. They are doing their own projects for ponds and for street sweeping, but there's the possibility that there might be some joint projects that we work on together. But it would be in addition to what the obligation that the sewers district has. So if the village of Eshwabanon wanted to offset some of their, maybe not build a pond or do some street sweeping, they would have to find additional agricultural land that would have to be managed. So it would end up costing them some to participate in this project.
Tom, has that been finalized? Has that plan been finalized?
It is not final. We are in the process of, we've submitted a draft to the DNR, and we're working on getting the final draft for DNR approval, which it has to go in by the end of this year, December 31st is due.
How large is the East River watershed?
I'm going to guess that this particular watershed, Dutchman and Eshwabanon together, is about 35,000 acres. I would think the East River watershed is, and I am guessing, but probably 50,000 to 60,000 acres.
Okay.
So that's kind of what's new with us. We're continuing work on projects, but not of the scale of the R2E2 at the treatment plants, but we are going to be out in the watershed.
Are there other programs, either state or federal programs, that we could participate in for the East River watershed?
The Fox Wolf Watershed Alliance, one of the NGOs that is working, I know they had been working in two watersheds on the west side, and I'm just drawing a blank on the names, but I believe they were going to be looking at some work in the East River watershed. So the Fox Wolf Watershed Alliance, they've been partnering with EPA on some projects.
Okay. Thanks. Any questions for Tom?
Everybody's looking at me.
Mr. Harris, do you have any questions?
I'll try.
Okay.
Is there an expectation that you're going to get around to the east side, or do you solve all the problems or bring it down low enough with that west side stuff that you maybe don't have to? Or whoever's funding it doesn't feel as though you have to chase.
If you look at that balance of what we discharge and that size of that watershed, it's about our obligation. However, the adaptive management program really is interested in bringing the water body, which would be the Fox River, the lower Fox River, into compliance with the water quality standards. So as we look, and we're working in that sub-watershed, we realize that alone is not going to bring that water body into compliance. It's going to take other groups working, and I can't tell you that 10 years, 20 years, if the state gives us an extension on an obligation, that we wouldn't be expanding our reach outside of that watershed. I'm hoping we're going to be very successful. Part of the success that we've had on the smaller pilot is being able to leverage federal dollars that are available to farmers for conservation and bring together some local dollars, some federal dollars, as well as some private dollars. There's foundations that are wanting to invest in this area, and so we've been able to do some of that. So it's possible. It's possible, but at this point, our plan is on that Dutchman-Neshwabinon.
How much money do you expect to spend on an annual basis on that program?
I think it's probably going to be about $2 to $2.5 million a year over about 20 years. Now, that's not going to be a uniform spend, but it's about, I think it's in the vicinity of a little over $50 million would be needed. Okay.
And what has been the most successful part of your pilots?
Well, it's been farmers just embracing the work. There are structural practices that are put on. The structural practices might be a grass waterway. So instead of seeing a gully running down the middle of a farmer's field, you create an actual waterway that the water can go in. You grass it to keep the sediment out on the field. We've done some wetlands restoration in that area. I think there were four wetlands that were restored. And then probably some of the really newest and most important things are getting cover crops on the land over the winter so that the soil's not bare over the winter. And with that cover crop, again with Brown County, the innovation that's being done is that farmers can actually come through early in the growing season. So when corn is maybe about a foot and a half tall, they can come through and plant in between the rows of the corn some type of a plant, whether it's a radish, a wild radish or something. It starts to take hold, it germinates, then the corn gets tall enough and it basically goes dormant. The corn shades it out. And then the farmer comes through in the fall and cuts the corn, and there's still, and then that plant then continues to grow, comes back in. So what used to be the case was farmers would try to put a cover crop in after they took the corn off the field. Well, in this climate, it's just too late. So this interseeding is called, has worked out really well. And there's a video that we've got taken a couple of years ago, and it shows, this is probably late March, shows water coming off of a field. You can see there's ice in the field, and you can see that the water is relatively clear. And then from the shot, you see coming down a ditch from the field next, it's just brown. So this field had something growing on it, and the next field didn't. And so that to me really clearly has shown that the cover crop is going to keep the sediment on the field and keep the nutrients. So those are matter of fact, in the Silver Creek watershed, when we started this project, I think it was a little over almost 4 years ago, about a third, maybe 30% of the fields had some cover on it over the winter. This past, going from 17 to into 18, it was almost 90% had something growing on it. And so our water quality data should be starting to show that we're going to be making a difference.
And that's the 90% in the Fox Wolf watershed?
The Silver Creek.
Silver Creek.
That would be the Silver Creek, I'm sorry.
How many of your communities are along the East River?
I'm sorry, what?
How many of your member communities are along the East River?
Quite a few. I think probably maybe 5 out of the 15 that are, I'm just trying to think about and guess how many.
Okay.
East River is a very complicated watershed. Not that it shouldn't be tackled, but it is a complicated, big watershed. A lot of large farms in the southern part of that watershed that are going to need to have some work done.
Much like you're doing.
Yeah, the Dutchman-Neshwabinon Creek has its own set of challenges. A lot of tile drainage in that watershed, and that's going to. Tile drainage is a challenge as well. I've probably exhausted all I know about farming. We have really good people who do know what they're talking about, and we've had very good cooperation with farmers.
I had a question about the debt service.
Yes.
And in the packet that we were given, I see the projections for the next 6 to 8 years. I'm just, the percentage of the budget that is debt service keeps on rising, and I don't know if there's a plateau point in the future in terms of percentage. As recently as 2013, it was under 40% of the budget. We're now at 47% of the budget is debt service, so I don't know how that's being reviewed on an annual basis.
Well, we certainly look at it. Our business is very capital intensive, and so the projects are big. We do have some pay-as-you-go type projects, typically around $2 million a year will be what we call annual capital, where we collect it in a year and pay it in a year.
Is there a ceiling that that the board has set to not surpass?
No, we don't have. We have there is a state mandated ceiling, you know, based on the tax or the taxable revenue in Brown County, and we're not close to that at all.
Okay.
We certainly took on a lot of debt. You know, we're taking on probably it's going to end up being about $160 million for the R2E2 project. You know, over the past 4 years, so that's a huge jump as to that debt's going to stay stable, and we'll be paying it off over the next 20 years. We do have a project that we're going to award that's putting standby generators at the De Pere facility. It's about $15 million. But so we're going to have those $5 to $15 million projects in our horizon for probably the foreseeable future.
And then on contracted services?
Yes.
I was just wondering, because we get told periodically by a couple of residents in terms of keeping something in-house as opposed to hiring a consultant or a contractor to do the work. I didn't know if from time to time the contracted services that you're doing would work out so that it would make more sense to have a full-time employee or two doing those things. If contracted services are almost one-seventh of the operating budget, maybe it makes sense to shift that because a contractor is going to charge much more on an hourly rate than a full-time employee.
Most of our contracted services are specialty things that we don't do. As we're taking on a new item with the R2E2 project is we have two megawatt digester gas engines. We do not have the staff with the expertise to maintain it, so part of our contracted services will be a maintenance program. And some of the larger, heavier equipment, these centrifuges that we've purchased, pretty significant rotating, high-speed rotating equipment, we just don't have that kind of expertise. We do have a very good maintenance staff, both electrical and mechanics, but we do look and decide which things that we can do, which are the ongoing things that, those are the ones that you want to hire your own staff if you have pretty regular, that you could keep somebody busy all the time. But if it's things that happen once a year, twice a year, once every 10 years, and then some of the engineering, quite a bit of that contracted services is in our engineering to design projects, and we just don't have enough of a workload to keep that kind of staff busy.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what I was looking for. Then the last one is, and I know you don't set the times, but annually we ask about budget meeting taking place in the evening as a variance so that it gives different people the opportunity to attend. We don't know if more would attend or more would not attend, but to at least offer that. When that's been presented to the board, what has been their reaction? Because it always is seeming to be taking place in the morning.
I think the reaction is that the people that do, we don't get many at our meetings, and the people that have come to our meetings tend to be not the residents of our communities, because they're not impacted directly by us, but tends to be the public works directors of our communities. And we've asked public works directors, do you want us to have meetings in the evening? And they've said, you know, not especially. And we really don't have many public works directors that come to our meetings either. I do pass that on every year.
I know you do, and I will, your call.
And I will one more time, but I think our commission has felt that this is, we just don't get enough, we don't believe we would get enough attendance to come, so, but I will certainly pass it on one more time.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Tom? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, we will move on to our second presentation of the night. Item 5B on the agenda. Earlier this year, we hired Somerville Architects to create a vision for us. Alloway likes its visions, and first vision we had obviously was the prison property, and now we've contracted with Somerville to help us with a vision of our primary commercial corridor, aka Webster Avenue, and primarily at the intersection of St. Joseph and Webster, going north, east and west a little bit, and just a little bit south. But to start with that, to create a vision for what that corridor could become if and when, I prefer to hear when, developers want to come in and invest in our great community. It's some prime property that many people have asked about over the years, and so village staff and board have asked Somerville, and we're very, very thankful to have them here tonight to give us a very exciting presentation. But I'd like to thank Mike Cotto, right?
Right.
President of Somerville. And we have Neil Yunk with us, the architect who worked with us. And we held a couple of workshops and talked to people about what we were looking for. And we engaged with significant property owners in that at the intersection of St. Joseph and Webster. So that would be the Mako family, the Diocese Associated Bank in Bellin. So they were engaged in the process. And you have anything else to say, Brad or Trevor? Without further ado, I would like to introduce our folks from Somerville Architects to show you something very exciting. Come on up, Neil.
Thank you.
And once again, folks, what you see is a vision. It's what could be. It's what Neil and his team have taken the input from what they heard in our workshops and from our corridor study and everything we've been doing in Alloway over the last several years and created a vision. If it's going to be that exact vision or not, we don't know, but it's a start.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Again, Neil Young, registered architect. Local firm here in Somerville, just up the road on Riverside Drive.
And Neil, I'm sorry, would you be able to speak into that so some of our residents can hear you? Thank you.
So again, the introduction here given by Jim. Neil Yonker, registered architect here with Somerville, a local firm just up the road. It's nice having that local influence. So a little bit about the introduction about this. The master plan that the village is currently working with. We kind of focused on the intersection of Webster Avenue and St. Joseph Street. It's kind of the hub of what could potentially be a new village center. A lot of potential for activity. So that was kind of the focus of this exercise, expanding upon the current master plan. Looking at the existing intersection there, the intersection does not have very many identifiers for the village of Alloway. Whether you're a local resident or somebody passing through, there's nothing that really shouts you're in the village of Alloway. So being able to introduce some key identifiers, bring buildings closer to the street edge, you can see there's a lot of asphalt, paving, some green space. The setbacks and buildings, there's no consistent street edge, so trying to bring buildings for a more uniform street front, and also capitalizing on the views to the east. So we're, letter D is up on the screen. Looking out towards the east, you can actually see above many of the buildings that are there and the trees. So it affords plenty of nice views out towards the horizon and the landscape beyond. So we decided that that could be a prime location for a village park and more of a community gathering space rather than on the street corner, which was sort of a designated location from the original master plan. So the project kind of kicked off with a visioning session where we focused on nearly 100 different images to kind of get a feel for the aesthetic, the look, the architecture, different components as far as street types, landscaping, top-ranked design elements, just thinking of different things as far as balconies, awnings, different features that people would like to see in order to make this a successful concept. And these were some of the top-ranked photos, basically as far as kind of a mix between traditional and a more contemporary architectural feel. Again, being a new development, it's kind of a hybrid because in the fact, if it were expanding on an existing development, it's more of an iteration over time, where this is a new development, so having a more contemporary feel is a little bit more appropriate. So the new site plan is a mix of primarily two- and three-story buildings. It's an increase in density from what's currently on the site. However, we felt that was necessary to give more prominence to the area in a higher density of people, which would also be more attractive to developers looking at the site versus single-story developments. So the new buildings highlighted in blue, you can see the massing generates more of a formal corridor along Webster. The parking is situated more so to the rear of the buildings, again, creating that prominent street edge and giving pedestrians the availability to walk along the street with wider sidewalks for increased safety. So the plan does incorporate many of the existing tenants that are there, keeping the banks, the eating places, and also providing many more opportunities for additional tenants. So I'll start with a few of the aerial images here. So you'll start to get a flavor of the development, creating that street edge and pushing the unsightly parking towards the rear of the buildings. This is a view looking south on Webster. On the lower left-hand corner, you'll see that it's kind of an entrance to the park, which we are conceptually calling the Village Green. It could be a cool concept that people could use as an identifier, you know, after work. Hey, meet me at the Village Green for the concert tonight. So again, just more fun, attractive things for the village. And you can kind of see that in the lower left there with an amphitheater, hardscaped plaza, mix of nice landscaping, basically a destination point for the Village of Alloway. As we get into some of the street level views here, you can see the varying in materials at crosswalks and intersections, and then the connection of the Arboretum Trail, which was part of the master plan, is kind of a focal point that crosses the intersection and makes a connection down to the Fox River Trail. So a building like this, you know, you can see first floor commercial, and then second floor, third floor could potentially be space for offices, residential. That corner element there could be a nice space for a corporate headquarters, small, on a smaller scale. The treatment to the landscaping in front of the buildings is a wider sidewalk with stormwater management, so some nice landscaping that also serves dual purpose. It's also a barrier to the cars driving by, which right now is a concern on Webster with the sidewalks immediately adjacent to the motorist traffic. Again, some more shots of what the architecture could look like. What we're seeing here is more of a kind of a warehouse type of feel with a rust-colored brick. Again, just keeping in mind that it's a mix of contemporary and traditional. Looking north towards the Village Green, the Village Center, treatments such as awnings on the retail storefront, just to provide a more human scale to the buildings. This is a street level view looking at the Village Green. Again, kind of a prominent sign to the entrance of it as an attractor to the site. Some landscaping and hardscape to bring people, draw them off of the street into the park. And many of the buildings within the development would have outdoor seating, expanding from the buildings so that there's more of an interaction between the outside spaces and the interior functions. You can see here restaurant serving is a great place to be viewing the amphitheater. So again, it's about bringing people and having a sense of place for the Village of Alloway. No questions?
Very nice. Any questions for Neil? Would you mind just going back real quick, Neil, to say page 9, slide 9? I don't know if everyone got that, but when you look at where the Village Green is right now, that's McDonald's, and so you're looking south from there, right? And then, so you have buildings along the right side, you have buildings along the left, and then you have townhouses even behind that, overlooking, as Neil said, the easterly view. So there are some pretty spectacular views from up there, and I think that would really be neat. This will be on our website, I'm sure. We can put this up on our website, and people can see the types of things. Could you go to the next slide? And so in between those townhomes and the buildings, and you have kind of a semi-rooftop restaurant that Neil was showing you in the right building. But then to have that, the entertainment space and the gathering space in between is really what people have been asking for. So I think you did a wonderful job of listening to the community and bringing something together. If we had before and after pictures, it would really be something. But it's... Chris, did you have a question?
The Arboretum Trail, if you could talk a little bit about that. I guess that was new to me.
Sure. So that was, again, something that was brought forward through with the original master plan that had been done prior. So it was a concept that was part of that plan. We just kind of expanded upon the name that had already been decided. And I think it's a connection between the East River Trail and the Fox River Trail.
And a little extra if you're calling it an arboretum trail. There's going to be pretty extensive plantings.
So I think one of the concept images here up on the upper left, a nice trail but plenty of landscaping along the way.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Do you have any other thoughts to share?
I think it's a tremendous opportunity for the village, and thank you again for this opportunity.
Well, we thank you, and to Somerville, I thank the whole company. You helped out. They donate a lot of their time for this project to keep our costs down, and as a Alloway business. We thank you very much and look forward to bringing this to life. Thank you very much, sir. Okay, moving on. Item number 6, public hearing to consider request from Dan Rorty to proceed with final approval of planned development district to construct a restaurant and microbrewery on parcel AL-44, located at 1649 South Webster, formerly Village Hall property. Is there anyone who would like to speak on this item this evening? Is there anyone who would like to speak on this item this evening? Come on up.
Okay, well, my name is Don Johnson, 1622 Rustic Oaks Court, and we are really looking forward to this brewery developing. There's a couple minor concerns that we have. We have a couple of widowed ladies living on our road. We would like to have them protected any way that we need to do that. I haven't talked to any neighbors that are against it. Okay. And so if they're not against it, I'm assuming myself that they're probably for it. So some of us walk the open lot where the town hall used to be. Are there going to be provisions? Are we going to be allowed to walk through there, or is that going to all be fenced off?
I don't know the answer to that. I would guess it's going to be fenced off, but I don't know.
I see people out there exercising and walking that vacant lot every day. Okay.
Interesting question.
You say it's not for exercise, but to visit the brewery
and
buy some product, they probably...
Then I think you're okay with that.
I'm sorry.
What's that?
I didn't hear that statement.
It, rather than say to use the property to exercise or get somewhere else, if you say we'd like a little easier access to the brewery, because you've got people
in
this
neighborhood. Well, my concern is that they're going to be that there would be fences put up.
I'm being facetious, but maybe they would see a reason. I guess there's no easement. What would you do on the other side of the fence, unless the street comes close enough? But.
Well. The easiest and most direct route from some of our homes to McDonald's for our coffee clutching is through the open field.
Okay.
So,
but you got to go through somebody's backyard to do it or not?
Right. Mine.
Yeah.
Oh, there. And you're there.
There we go.
And he has a toll booth in his backyard.
We got a coffee cart.
And the neighbors are welcome to go through my backyard too. So I mean, no. It's, but my question is, would that property be fenced off?
I think that will be taken care of during the design phase. Does anyone?
I don't know, and I haven't seen the design, but yeah. I'm guessing it probably would be.
We've talked about the evergreens bordering the fence.
Yeah.
We've talked about a lot. We've talked about the runoff from the property. We've addressed all that. I can't think of anything else other than letting us who live there continue to traverse the property like we have been.
We will surely put that request in for
okay.
you.
Fair
Thanks
enough.
For your time. You guys did a wonderful job listening to all of us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to say anything about this evening? Come on up, Judy.
Judy Pohl, 2375 Riverside Drive. I just have a curiosity question of what kind of restaurant is this going to be? Is this going to be just lunch and evening meals, or is this going to be something that's going to be open for the entire day? Is this going to be just hamburgers and french fries, or is it going to be something better than that?
To the best of my knowledge, they have not secured a restaurant yet. Is that true?
That is right.
not to compete with McDonald's.
We did put in the developer's agreement. There cannot be a drive-through.
Okay, I'm just curiosity yep. about that. And as long as I'm standing here so I don't have to come back, I'm going to say there's one other thing that I would like to see on that other thing. And that is, they had some beautiful flat rooftops. How about some rooftop gardens up there?
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Dan Rorty, the one working with Malcolm's in the development of this and Delir's construction. To address the questions, Don, there is a privacy fence screening that has to occur between the residential properties and the business property by village ordinance and this PDD. There are some extensive discussions about it, and every effort is going to be made to maintain as much green vegetation there as possible. But like the current conditions, you wouldn't be able to traverse from Rustic Oaks to Webster without going around or over the fence. That being said, the property owner, or the development agreement, and the Malcolms and the village agreed that accommodations will be made for some of the things Somerville has just presented in terms of making a nicer sidewalk situation right at the Webster Avenue. So that allows some walking back and forth there. After that, this business property will be much like any other business property. If you walk through other parking lots at the strip mall and so forth, there would be a parking lot at some point, which is going to be less busy in the morning because the brewery wouldn't be open first thing in the morning for that type of thing. So every accommodation has been made to make this integrate into the current fabric that's there. It'll act very much like many other businesses that are along that street, and we are following other Callaway recommended guidelines for places along property lines. There are not fences planned between the businesses, so between the bank to the north and the salon to the south. Those will be somewhat seamless, although there will be planting separations between there as part of the agreement, too, to see that there's good landscaping in those areas. In terms of the type of restaurant, correct, it's not determined at this time. And it's always done very quietly. As you can imagine, an existing restaurant, if perhaps their landlord finds out that they're thinking of moving, or even their client base, it can disrupt their process and their ability to negotiate. And so many times these things have to be done very quietly until we have them well secured. The Malcolms have every interest in being heard that the restaurant that comes into the area would be complementary to their business, so that you have a nice sort of 1-2 punch there in that area. So I've been very impressed in working with Abby and David. They're Green Bay people. I mean, no matter where they travel and how they've gotten here, they're very much a part of our community, and they want to certainly be enhancing it. I don't know if there are any other questions that the trustees might have about the plan as it's developed today.
We're good. Thanks, Dan.
Oh, no, you're good. I just wanted to ask a question.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing. Thank you all for your comments. We will move on to action item number 7, adoption of ordinance 2018-12, establishing a plan development district for parcel AL44 located at 1649 South Webster. Do I have a motion on this item?
I would move to approve.
Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? Hearing none, we have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
We have special thank you to the Zambaldi people and Dan and everybody for going through what seems to be a long, long process. And we're excited about now being closer to the end and getting the deal done. So thanks for all your hard work. Appreciate it.
And excited to have Delaire as part of the project as well. Thank you very much.
Okay. Action item number 8, public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Illinois Bike Ped Committee. Recently, the Public Works, at Public Works meetings, it's been announced that the village will no longer be reconstructing the 2300 block of Oakwood Avenue for financial reasons. But instead, at the same time, they're going to repave St. Mary Street when it is actually scheduled for complete reconstruction. I think that those two projects need to be revisited, and if you're going to be reconstructing Oakwood Avenue because it has a very low rating, PASER rating, the entire street should be reconstructed instead of just part of the street. Otherwise, it'll never get onto the schedule to be reconstructed for many, many years or decades. So, and instead of just resurfacing St. Mary's Street and then rebuilding it right away, and 2 years after that, I think that time frame should be looked at, and then either the reconstruction of St. Mary Street should be moved on out, or just redo St. Mary Street altogether. And then finally, there was a plan to put a sidewalk from the Public Works Department on the south side of St. Mary Street that would connect to the park that gets to Sunlight Park, and then that was moved over to the north side when the village purchased the Town and Country property. And so the village is planning on putting in a sidewalk on St. Mary Street, which is expensive. The people on St. Mary should have some voice in whether they put it in. Maybe that should be funded maybe through a Safe Routes to School grant and some other things. So I'd like to make sure that the Oakwood Avenue deletion, the 2300 block of Oakwood Avenue, deleting from the construction project, is looked at again, and whether it's in the best interest of the city to village to delete one project and then double up on another. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else tonight who would like to speak on something that's not on the agenda? Hearing none?
I do.
Come on up, Don.
You guys are going to get tired of hearing.
Okay. Not at all.
So, my name is Don Johnson, rustic golf cart. Anyway, I'm a wood turner. I go to school at MWTC. I've been doing this since 2011. And I have noticed that there are large amounts of wood, trees, that are dumped off at the village waste site. Now, would it be possible at all to get some of those trees and cut them up ourselves for school purposes? What do you do with your wood? That is it chipped up? Is it sold? What happens to it?
That's a good question for our director of parks. And guess what? He's here.
Is he here?
Yeah. Yes. Typically, when we remove a tree on public properties, if it's in front of a house, we allow that homeowner, if they would like that wood, then they can keep that during the removal. Any other wood we haul to our yard waste site. We currently do typically grind most of that up and utilize it for landscaping, tree planting, playgrounds, things like that, for the most part. Past practice with any of that wood, I'm not sure what you used to do with it, Brad, with regards to that.
I think it's a great use to go to the school. I think it'd be a great use to go to a school for them to use.
Yep, and what we do is we treat the end so that it doesn't shrink anymore and stuff, and then we split it in half typically, and then we make bowls and balusters and all kinds of.
Is there a particular species you're looking for?
Just about anything.
Ash
would be very good.
We've got a lot of those.
We've got a lot of them.
I'll ask these women if they'd like to have an ash.
If you'd like one tomorrow, I'll get one.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you connect with Mr. Lang? I'm sure he will take good care of you.
I hope that not that this isn't too corny a question. But
not at all. It's a great question.
Okay. Yeah.
Benefits two parties.
Rather being reused like that than chip.
What a ball.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. You want a tree?
Okay. Moving on. Item number 9, action regarding auditor's contract. Julie.
All right, you've got the memo in the packet. I'm looking for the board's approval to extend this contract for 3 years, our audit contract this year.
Okay, and you're comfortable with the increase?
Yes, absolutely.
Why is that?
Well, basically because I told them all I had in the budget was 2%. So work with me on that. It would be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
And I'm definitely happy with the fund and the service they provide.
Okay. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Trustee Harris.
Second.
Seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? Mm-hmm. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 10, developer's agreement for Martha Street. Sean.
Sure. We have worked with a developer on sharing the development costs. We have put together an agreement. We had gone through this agreement at the Public Works Committee meeting last week, Wednesday. We've just gotten it today. We had made some revisions based on comments we had received from the owner and developer and Public Works Committee members. We have laid out the cost sharing of the construction and engineering costs. Trevor, do you want to bring up that estimate? What we have done is we have taken the cost that we have already reviewed here at the Village Board, and we've put that into an agreement. And there are three tasks that need to get done while the road needs to get constructed. There's before that, there are plans that need to be prepared, and then during construction, there's inspection and there's construction staking that needs to get done. If you want to go back to the agreement, I believe it was the September 18th Village Board meeting, you guys had approved funding up to $27,000 of the construction costs, or 50% of the bid amount. We feel that it would make sense to bid this project with the other 2019 reconstruction projects to get better unit prices, and the plans would be prepared. We can walk through the agreement real quick if you'd like. The street water main and storm sewer plans would be designed to village and DNR specifications. The village and the owner would share in the effort to put together plans, specs, and the cost estimating. The owner has already started the topographic survey, and they've started drafting the plans. We will assist with the engineering. I'm going to go to the second page. We will publicly bid this project because of the cost of it. We need to publicly bid it. We will bid with the other projects planned for next year, with the hope of getting good competitive pricing. The owner will provide the construction staking. They will also, at the end of the project, prepare the record drawings that we need to have on file. We will inspect the project. Storm sanitary sewer and water laterals will be extended from the mains to the property line by the contractor. From the property line to the homes, the homeowners will be responsible for that. The cost of the new laterals will be the property owner, will be billed to the property owners. They will need to, the property owners will need to apply and submit fees or permits and fees for the services. Financial guarantee, Brad and I have worked on this aspect of the development agreement. Do you want to talk about this, Brad?
The financial guarantee is based on what the developer brought to the board back in September, signifying that the home and property values would be in that $330,000 each. So what we're looking at doing is, within that guarantee, is based on today's tax rate, this is what the payments would be. Knowing that going forward that could change, but they would have a minimum amount that they would need to provide back to the village, so that the $27,000 investment, or 50%, not to exceed $27,000, is paid back. It could be in less than the 6 years that we're putting into those documents. So I just wanted to make sure that was all put out in black and white.
The other thing I want to point out, too, underneath the financial guarantee, that the village will be vetting and administrating this project. After the vetting, after a contractor has been selected, before we start the project, we would ask that the owner provide to the village half of the contract amount. And any additional expenses that are incurred by the project during construction. Again, the village board has agreed to pay up to $27,000 or 50% of the bid amount. One of the other requests by the owner and developer was just to get this project built as soon as possible. They want to start construction this winter, the spring. We had earlier attempt at this agreement, we had indicated that the utilities and the road would be done by October of next year. Indicated them that we can, weather permitting, start this project in the spring, and it shouldn't take all that long to build. But I would believe that we could have the utilities and the base placement of the base by middle to end of June, and kind of coordinate the schedule after that with the developer. My concern would be that if they hadn't started construction right away, that they're going to have dump trucks and cement trucks in and out of that site, and we wouldn't want to pave that roadway until that work was done. But we'd be able to coordinate that with them. But the specifications would be written such that the utilities would be placed along with the placement of base by the middle of June.
Any questions for staff?
Just a couple. We're setting aside 2.5 years for construction, correct?
For the homes.
Okay. And do we need to, in that final paragraph on that page, do we need to define what we mean by complete the construction? We want to add in something along the lines of certificate of occupancy is obtained, or words to that effect?
Certificate of occupancy would probably cover it all.
I want to make sure, because complete the construction might be a little too vague.
Any other questions?
No, that can be
added. If no other questions, I'll accept the motion on this item.
Move to approve.
With Trustee Harris's addition, right?
Right.
Okay, and seconded by Trustee Genrich.
Yep.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Gentlemen, thank you.
I would add that once again, we're fortunate to have some developers that are excited. I think they'd like to have started last week. We'll, you know, try to push this thing along as quickly as we can, and I have three new residences on that property before long. So we're excited about that.
Thank you very much.
Action item number 11, temporary patching of St. Mary's Boulevard. Sean.
Well, we have done some requests to make some improvements to St. Mary's Street. A number of homeowners have come in and expressed concern with the condition of St. Mary's, mainly from 461 to 321 St. Mary's on the south side. I've recently gone out there to take a look at it. I do have some pictures. There is some significant rutting along the south side, along the curb and gutter. Yeah, picture. Right, there's a good picture of the rutting that runs along the south side of St. Mary Street. Just east of there, we do have an area that there are a number of potholes that should be addressed. I have met Northeast Asphalt out there and did meet them last week Friday. We took a look at it and I had them give me a cost estimate of what it would cost to repair this. Would cost roughly $10,000 to wedge, put in a wedge 6 to 8 feet wide, roughly 800 feet long on the south side of the roadway, by half of the width of that lane. And it would be a temporary fix that would extend the life of this pavement to 2021. It would eliminate a hazard. I mean, if somebody's walking along there and they're not paying attention, they could roll their ankle or fall and get hurt. I think the maintenance is necessary, again, to get this project to 2021. There will be some economy of scale. We will be paving Service Road next week, early next week. If we move forward with this project, Northeast Asphalt, when they leave Service Road, will stop here and place that wedge.
Will there be any grading or anything? Or
No. We're going to come in and fill in that wedge, and again, that wedge would extend, roughly speaking, 6 to 8 feet. Out from that curb and gutter, if you want to go to that pothole area. In the area of the potholes, that wedge would get wider. It would probably include that entire eastbound lane. And that the length of that is roughly 150 to 200 feet long.
You think that would hold for a couple of years?
I would hope so. And ask Dave that question. Or if he's asked for me, I believe that it would.
Okay. Thank you. Do I have a motion on this item or a question for Sean? I'll take a motion on this item. Trustee Genner.
I would move to approve.
I'll second.
Second by Trustee Atwood. Discussion, Trustee?
I appreciate Sean's review of it is temporary, and we heard earlier concerns about fixing something now and refixing it, you know, a couple years down the road. But I think from a safety perspective and the relatively low cost, it makes a lot of sense. And without the ability to, you know, fix every road in the village, which we all wish we could do, we do have to pick and choose and make some of those hard decisions once in a while. So I think engineering did a great job of coming up with this fix. We're fortunate to have the service road being done at the same time, so we can save a little money that way. So good job on your part.
Just educate me, to grind this off at all, or just come in and put new asphalt over the low?
It's a thin overlay.
Yeah.
Okay. Along the curb, it would be filling that rut, probably 3 to 4 inches.
Yeah.
And then that's from where it
tapers.
Yes.
Tapers,
yeah. We call that a wedge, right. Yep. It would taper up to zero.
Trustee Hears?
So we're looking at a cost of approximately $10,000. And, you know, in terms of prioritizing, you're much better judge than me. I'm just trying to balance out with what we had planned for, I believe, if we're swapping out some of the work for oak wood that's being, it'll be delayed a little bit. That was also $10,000 that we're just swapping out the dollars, or is that a different dollar figure? Okay.
To reconstruct the segment of Oak Hill Avenue, sorry. We hadn't come up with a cost estimate for that. We hadn't driven it. Off the cuff, I would think it would be $500,000. That's a longer block. Anywhere between $300,000 to $500,000.
Okay.
And that's reconstruct on Oakwood, not Oak Hill.
Oakwood.
Yeah. Okay. Not being familiar enough with the specific projects, that's what I needed to understand better. Thank you.
We'll bring that up. We will consider that. That came up at the Public Works Committee meeting. Why did the Lemons fall short of Alloway Avenue? The condition of Oakwood Avenue between Mission and Alloway Avenue isn't the greatest. There's some old infrastructure underneath the roadway. I guess it comes down to cost. As I mentioned, it is a financial deal. Right now, we put together a preliminary estimate of what our reconstruction projects will cost with engineering, and we're well over $3 million right now. We're at close to $3.4 million. You add that segment of that street to that project, and we're just under $4 million. And our construction seasons are short, and it's a lot of work to take on in one summer. We can do it. If the money's available, if we want to borrow for bond for that amount, we can definitely do that. It'll be up to you guys.
I have confidence in the prioritization you guys do. I just want to try to understand that better, so thank you.
Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. On to item number 14. Thank you. Plowing the East River, discussion regarding plowing the East River Trail. Mr. Clark.
Thank you. Evidently, my absence last meeting, apologize for that, but resident had a request for plowing the East River Trail, Rush Family East River Trail, during the wintertime. In the past, the department has not plowed it. We've utilized that location for winter sport activities such as cross-country skiing. We have received in the past years several requests, I guess, from different residents on why we don't, why don't we plow it. Their reasoning tends to be that they don't see a lot of people skiing, a lot more people utilizing it for walking, hiking, things like that. With regards to reason in the last few years that we haven't done that work, if you recall when the work with plowing the Fox River Trail and working with Brown County and the other communities along the Fox River Trail to do that work, at that time that the board agreed to go ahead and plow that trail, the suggestion was to not do the East River Trail so that we'd have the ability on each trail. For having winter sports on one and walking and biking and whatnot on the Fox River Trail. With regards to length of the East River Trail, it's about 2 miles, so it's a mile short of what the work was that we initially undertook for the Fox River Trail. So as far as manpower, equipment, things like that, we do have that. As far as the manpower to do the work, it's less than what we had planned to do when we were doing the Fox River Trail. Cost-wise, utilizing the cost that we had figured when we were estimating the cost for the Fox River Trail, on an average annual basis, we have $3,500 in labor and materials, so it's not a lot. To do that type of work, it's just prioritizing when it snows, we have to get out there. to do the plowing. You know, we have to check it periodically to make sure it's safe, those type of things. With regards to the cross-country skiing, I think we can still allow for that. We can still do both. It just not necessarily maybe as lengthy of a cross-country ski trail that we've had in the past. Here's just a possible opportunity to put in a trail utilizing village lands, you know, green spaces from Kiwanis Park down to Wheezy Park. We could still put in a two-mile loop that would not utilize the trail, cross it occasionally in a couple of locations, but still allow for, you know, those users that would like to cross-country ski or you know, there's still space down there for snowshoeing, things like that. So as far as the ability to do both, I think we can do both with very little effort. So any questions with regards to any of the operations that it would require or anything like that?
Yeah, how would you, do you have to mow that first, or how do you, there is no existing trail?
For the cross-country ski trail?
Correct.
Correct. A lot of it is grassy areas, we also have the disc golf course down in that location too, so utilizing some of those fairways, things like that. Where there's few trees and the grass isn't quite as long. But once you get snowpack on there and you run the machine over it, you'd be able to, you know, get a trail in there, which probably would be a better trail than trying to put a cross-country ski trail on an asphalt path. That's very difficult because of the snow depth needed. And, boy, with the winters we've had in the last few years, you know, it's hit and miss on whether or not we even have enough snow to accommodate that. So.
Look, with the Fox River Trail too, when you tried to mix, you know, people would try to walk on the trail, so then you had a bunch of, you know, ruts and.
That's a great point.
You really can't do both.
Right. Even if you don't plow, we get a lot of individuals that walk on these when snow's soft and wet, and then when it refreezes, then it creates ankle busters. You know, so then the next time they go out there, or even the skiers complain because, you know, people are walking in the ski trails. Yeah. You know, so with that freeze thaw, that can create even additional issues.
Okay, so you said 3,500 to plow the trail, East River Trail, rush sure. Over the course of a winter.
Sure.
You have to budget a new amount to mow or lay out and then groom a trail, or you're already doing that?
We're already doing that,
okay.
And this budgeted amount is labor and equipment that we already have.
Yeah.
So it's just an estimate of how long, you know, it would take us to do it.
You make the walkers really happy, and for the reasons you said, you arguably are giving the cross-country skiers a lot better service.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah.
You know, it's maybe not as long a trail as what we've done in the past, but winters don't seem to be as long and as harsh as they have been either, where you get a lot of deep snow. And, you know, there are trails in Brown County that if that skier wanted to go to a lengthy trail such as out at reforestation camp or something like that, there are those within Brown County too.
Sounds good.
So you won't have to add anything to your budget if you guys go forward with that. Okay. I don't know that takes any action, and we can't tonight, but is that something you want to send back to the Parks Committee, or is that just something you guys want to choose to do?
I think that it's something that we can go ahead and choose to do, and you know, just wanted to make sure that the board was aware of some of the options, especially with the talks that we had when we were talking about the Fox River Trail and having both of those different options for the different trails.
Well, thank you for looking into that.
Sure.
And if you choose to do that, please let the resident know so he can enjoy his walks in the wintertime.
Sure.
Okay. Action or item number 15, discussion regarding property conditions. Mr. Lang.
Well, we decided that this is going to be an ongoing topic, but I just wanted to kind of give a brief update of where we're at or what we're trying to put together. I do want to invite Mike Lauder, our code enforcement officer, to attend a future meeting. Felt that tonight, like I'm sitting here, might have been a long meeting and turned out to be a lot shorter than what I anticipated. But what Mike will be doing is putting together a list of the common concerns or complaints that he receives. We have, for several years, put together these cards that are specific to the complaint. As maybe he's traveling by and sees that, you know, you haven't cut your grass for a long time, the card just is a reminder card to please, you know, take care of this because it is one of our ordinances. And the icebreaker aspect, just as a reminder, on that card it does indicate, you know, if there's questions, concerns, please call the village hall. Or we're going to make that a little bit bigger. Make sure his trick phone number is on there, his email, those sort of things, so that he can communicate. One of the questions I think that the trustee Atwood indicated is, could we make it some sort of a, can we help you, or sort of a card? We're trying to find something to utilize in whether or not we can take the cards that we have put together previously and modify it enough to take care of those issues as well. I think one of the things that we're a little bit of a concern is when you ask, how can we help you? Don't want to give that false impression that then we'll send staff over to mow your grass, pick up your garbage, or whatever the case may be. So it's trying to find that fine line in there to make it a welcoming, a reminder, and if we can provide resources through maybe a service club or whatever the case may be, and try to have some of that stuff available for people. Because I think ultimately, you know, we're trying to address an issue, and if a person is unable to do it, we want to make sure that we can try to help whatever way we can. So those are some of the things that we're working on right now. I just wanted to keep it on the agenda because we did talk about it as an ongoing agenda item. And if there are any other questions or thoughts, please let me know, and we'll continue to work on that and be bringing Mike back probably in November.
Trustee Atwood, anything?
Yeah, I'm good with that. And I would agree with you on the, you open up a certain window on the offer to help. I think maybe where I was going with that was reaching out to a landlord or, you know, something of that nature. But, yeah, I agree. And I just like the fact that we're continuing to talk about it, and it puts it in the front, and we start to do things about it. So, thank you.
And one comment on that. I liked how you entitled it. It's property conditions. It's not just rental properties.
Right.
It's, we have ordinances. People live by the ordinances, and if they're not, then we have to not deal with it, regardless of who owns the property. Okay. Anything else on that? We will move on to item number 16: future agenda items. Is there anything we want to see on a future agenda item, fellow board members? Hearing none, we will no longer have village board meetings. We will move on to item number 17. Do I have a motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, specifically Huntington Bank negotiations. Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Dart. Any discussion? Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrick.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Dart.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye, and good job getting everybody out by a vote.